Well, several things to do today. First of all, let's take care of 45 C and D here on this exercises. And then we'll get into lesson 46 on these compound verbs. 45 C, instructions were to transform the following conditional sentences from type A to type B, so that the transformed sentence correctly renders the English. Caution, it may be necessary to alter the verbs in both clauses. So your type A, we want to go from type A, which they give you, to a type B. So basically, you're going to be putting things in subjunctive. And then using particles and so forth appropriately. In other words, you're using A with the indicative will go to e-on with the subjunctive, basically. And then your negatives will change from U to me. So let's do like we did on the last ones. Go ahead and read your... Read what the Greek says there, and then read your transformation of it. And John, why don't you go ahead?
Euk ekousin ton nomon mou sorteson
kai.
Eane akousi ton nomon mou sorteson kai.
Okay. Eon me akuosi, is that what you had? Akuosi, is there an omega there? Need a subjunctive form, yeah. Eon me akuosi, with omega, sigma, iota, optional nu, ton nomon, u, sophason tai. Okay? So if they do not hear the law, they will not be saved. Eric, number two?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Eon me grapsetai me espieto. Right. You keep the imperative the way it was, but change the other to subjunctive. Okay. Let's see. Ergazetai. I think you had the form. It's ergazetai. That's actually. That's what happened. You were looking at grapho, and then you got the. This isn't an augment either, so it does stay there.
Oh,
yeah. Ergazetai. Your form will only. The only difference in your form will be an eight instead of an epsilon. Okay. Some of those are tricky, though. You got to watch epsilons. Your eye probably caught that epsilon and then caught the gamma there, and maybe retranspose the gamma in a row or something. That's what happened. So eon me ergazetai, you'd have an eta there instead of an epsilon. It's the only change, really. And then change it to me in eon. Eon me ergazetai me estieto. Okay, number three. I'll go and just walk right. No, I guess Jim. Yeah. Question on. Yes. Yes, it's an imperative form, actually. So it is a command. Don't let them eat. It's a third person imperative. Huh?
Imperative of others.
Yeah. It's an imperative form. Both of them are imperative forms. You don't really change that. And the may is may because it's imperative. In other words, the negative is imperative. It's an imperative move. Now, it is a third person imperative, so we're saying do not let him eat. Yeah. May he not eat, something like that. Let him not eat. So it's a third person imperative form. Yeah, it's kind of like adjective in Hebrew. It really is the same function. Okay, Jim, do you want to take number three? Yeah, just read the both. Yeah, read the Greek as it is, and then read it the way you changed it. Okay. In this case, you may want to change the rest of it too, just because we had an aorist form in the first part. And you'll need to go, see, because of the clause relationship and this type B, you can go with, and the conclusion will be a clause in indicative imperative or subjunctive when it's in independent uses. And your type B is going to be the same, except that, let's see, I went ahead and changed it from the aorist to the future, just because Yeah, just because of the translation down there, it says no one will understand. Yeah.
Any examples?
So I had no essay there for future. No one will understand. Yes, anybody with a question? Did you find any examples where they went ahead and kept the aorist? See, they've got an aorist form in the first one up here. And,
Well, he gave the caution that we may have to change both terms.
Yeah, he did. The only question I have is how he's translating the first one as it was. In other words, he's only giving your translation for the new one. It might be something like no one would understand or something like that, the way you'd render it. Yeah, if a man spoke in tongues, if you spoke in tongues, no one would understand. Okay, that's probably all right. So, yeah, it'd be better to go to the future in this second clause just because of the way you set up the new clause with a subjunctive like that. It's very common to see that in the future in the second clause. I think that'd be the more common way to see it. So, aeon lales glosais udes noese. Let's see. Oh yeah, you could have had it. Well, it's no udes is really singular. No one. It's kind of indefinite, but it's singular form, so you'd want to have singular form noese. Epsilon iota, second person. Well, no, third person. Excuse me, third person singular.
So the optional.
Oh, yes. Well, let's see. Noise. That one doesn't have an optional new. Just epsilon iota ending. Just your third person future. You know, like. Lue. No, it doesn't have an optional new on that one. So it's epsilon iota. Now, I think I've got it in parentheses here that this verb may get no A just without a sigma and an accent shift as a possible formation of the. Future. Let me double check this. No, I don't know if this verb is in the back here or not. It doesn't look like it is. It doesn't look like it is back here, but it seems like when I looked it up, it had two forms for the future. Okay, so if you speak in tongues, no one will understand. Seems to be the way he's translating putting the English under there, you almost have to change that to a future. Okay. Number four, then, Dan, we'll go ahead.
A above the six star, so they so die.
Okay.
And on above T so thin, so they so die.
Okay, Aon Baptis, I had Baptizon tie there. Because we're going from, let's see. Well, we went from aorist passive now to just a present progressive idea. So, see, if they are being baptized, since he put a progressive idea in there, that's kind of tricky. You kind of have to look at what his English is underneath. But if they are being baptized, I would put a present form in there just because of the fact that it's being baptized. Well, it's passive, but it's progressive. And that makes it a little bit ambiguous, too, because it's hard to say this. They are being baptized. It gives you a definite progressive idea, but it also gives you a passive idea. They're not baptizing, but they are being baptized. So, but the being, see, you could say they were baptized, if they were baptized, something like that, and then use the aorist. But it's saying, if they are being baptized, giving you a present progressive idea and passive. So it's present, progressive, and passive. So, baptizon tai, omega nu tau alpha iota would be the way to render that. Aeon baptizon tai, sophason tai. And the last part you keep the same. There's no reason to change that. Okay, and number five, Glenn, I'll take that. Eric, you had one already. Okay. Okay. Now, the first form there, you don't need an augment, though, because if you behold his face...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, on the ores. Yeah.
The ores.
Yeah, and it should be an Ada with the Oda subscript there for the end. So, S-A-O-R-E-S, S-A-O-R-E-S, mm-hmm. Excuse me, no augment, S-A-O-R-E-S, S-A-O-R-E-S. We'll get it, we'll get it. Yeah, it's always hard when you go from epsilon to omega. Does the accent shift? I didn't put the accent down here. I got it over the omega, but... Yeah, if it's just a subjunctive, that Ada probably won't draw the accent on that one. Unless it's aorist or something. Yeah, just the present form. Yeah, the present form won't draw the accent, so it'll just be that O race. Ada with the O subscript of the accent, cute on the omega. Okay, so Aon, that O race, to prosopona to, and then. Changing the last part, he will heal you, but would be therapeuse set. Okay? All right, any other questions there? All right, 45D, transform the following conditional sentences from type B to type C so that the transform sentence from correctors renders in English. Caution may be necessary to alter the verbs in both clauses. Okay, this will generally be the case here because your type C's are going with the A plus the past indicative. And then on plus the past indicative. So you're going to be putting past tense forms. Now your choice between aorist and imperfect is going to largely depend on aspect and also perhaps on certain verbs not having an aorist. For example, if it's the verb to be, you're going to have to use an imperfect because it doesn't have an aorist. So I think I went basically with aorist most of the time here, just except for the last part. When in doubt, use aorist. Okay. Unless there's a real obvious progressive aspect, it's best to use aorist. And I don't know if any of these had a progressive aspect that was they were emphasizing, at least as far as his translation. So, number one then, let's see, Mark, I guess next, just do the same there, read the Greek as it is, and then how you changed it.
I just want to remind everyone to vote today.
Oh, okay, good, amen, for sure, for sure.
On
the class assignment. Okay. Okay. Your on generally is post-positive, so you probably put edexamatha on auton, just to get the word order there. That's not. I don't know if he's made a big point of that or not, but...
I thought it just came before the verb.
Uh-huh. That's why I thought, I was wondering if he...
Oh, he didn't mention that. Okay.
Yeah, it just comes after this first word generally. Whatever that is. Your examples, you know, Kalos on up there in the example, and just trying to find if he make a statement about this anyplace. Yes, within its phrase, within its own clause. E'on can start something, but on, I don't know if we've really made a point of that or not. That's the thing I want to check on here. I'm not certain. It seems like I think it's normally done that way. Now it may be in the previous. If anybody finds it, shout. if there's a statement about on. No, we may have maybe going back here to the. But that may not necessarily apply when we look at it as a conjunction or something. I don't think we've really seen it before. Well, that's funny. Looks like that one kind of slipped through the cracks. He didn't really make a statement about it. To check that in one of the larger grammars just to be sure on this. I'm pretty sure it's post-positive, but I don't want to commit myself here without. In other words, I'm kind of going by just the way I've seen it all the time.
Can you
one statement? Yeah, go ahead.
Explain to me the verb form there.
Oh, Anything else there?
No, I got that, although I think what was said was Elfin or something.
Right? Oh, he said he just put the optional new on that Elfin. It's got that form can take an optional new. But are you talking about the last verb form?
Yeah.
Ed exometha. Okay, you're going to an aorist there.
Okay.
And the reason you're going to an aorist is because you're going to a type C.
Okay.
In other words, the type C clause is going to use aorist, and, you know, or past tense forms.
I've got aorist, but I have aorist past tense.
Oh.
Middle.
Okay.
This is a deponent.
It's a deponent verb. So you'd have to check decomai to see if it takes both. That one might take both a passive or a middle form. It seems like I've got a middle form here, too. But you have to check decomai to see if it's got both for its aorist, whether it's got both a passive and the middle.
There's no passive in the indefinite.
No passive, okay. This is an exercise, huh? Okay. Well, you probably better use the middle then. Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry, there's no statement here that I can find that tells us for sure about this on. Looking at every example that I can find it in here, it's got it postpositive right after the verb. But I'm almost certain, just because of the examples, it's always being pictured that way. E'on is okay. It can stand by itself. That usually comes right at the beginning. But just quickly inspecting these examples, and I don't see any. Okay, kai e'on. As long as you got e'on, that seems to, you know, being able to stand it, to stand by itself. But all the examples that just have on, have them having the second word in the clause. So I'm quite certain that's the case. I didn't even think about it, didn't you? Hopeful's on. Yeah, it sure looks like it. But I don't find him making any statement on it. Hopeful's on. Yeah.
You mean quote positive in...
within its clause.
In conditional...
Right, in conditional sentences like that, right. In other words, this particular use of the particle on from conditionals. So I'll have to make a note to double-check that. And then we'll clarify that. We'll try to get some clarification on that. But I think that's the case. We'll operate that way for this exercise, and then we'll make sure, double check on it. But I'm quite certain that's the case. Okay. A little bit may turn a life on it, but I think it's pretty safe. Okay. You can omit the on. There's one remark about that. But there isn't any statement I can find here as far as its position. Okay. Number, so Aeltha or Aelthen proshemas edexamatha on auton. Okay, number two then, Price.
A epoemen to Salama to Seu Agape to on Hemas.
Okay. You had Agape to says he would have loved us. That would be active though. So you should just keep it agape sen, or agape se. Epsilon new ending, just because it remains active. So just put it in the aorist and keep it active is all you need to do there. So a epoiesamen, that's what you had there for the first part, wasn't it?
Epoiesamen.
Used what? Oh, used imperfect. Okay, what form did you have then? Okay, but that would be subjunctive though. You want to keep, if you're going to go to imperfect, keep it imperfect indicative. In other words, type C is going to use indicative forms. So you still have the augment on it. And so what epoieo is what, epoiumen or something like that? Isn't that contract? It's a contract verb. Have to double check the form, but I think it'd be umen. Eta plus omicron. Okay, or just epoiesamen for if you went aorist. So a epoiesamen or epoiumen, I believe. I did check that form. Tothelema tutheu agapesen on hemas. Okay, number three, Dale.
Yeah, agape somen autom kai hemas agapese.
Okay.
Agape somen autom.
Okay, agape-sen or agape-se. The first form there, I think you probably had it right. It was agape-samen, alpha. Yeah, you had an alpha there. I think you read it with an omicron, but should be an alpha just because you want to keep it nearest. Unless you went imperfect, and there again, you'd have a contract form. So you don't see those imperfect forms, these contract verbs, very much. Interesting. Haven't thought about it. Of course, you don't see imperfect forms all that much anyway. You see, you know, aorist far more frequently anyway. So, agape samen, auton, kai, an, humas, hemas, agape sen. Okay, so if we had loved him, he would have also loved us. Number four, then, Steve. Okay. Good. I guess, yeah, Medes. I've got Medes also for that. I was just wondering if we needed to change that to Udes. What was that? Okay, that was it, because I've got it definitely marked here.
Well, it's usually
May. Okay. All right, that opens the door a little bit, but if it's usually, then go ahead and use May. Okay. Yes, right, yeah. Negative usually May. Okay. A May des e keruxen or keruxe ton logontes aletheas uk an auton ekusan. Okay, converting that to aorist. Question?
I can have a problem here in determining whether to use passive or.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
If no one had said I had in there, had preached, you know, if it were passive, how would you translate it?
If it were passive, yeah. You'd have to kind of reverse this. If the word hadn't been preached, something like that. If the word hadn't been preached, maybe. But you see, if no one had preached the word of truth, I'll tell you what the problem is, and it's a common one with English, and that is that English uses the auxiliary verb for both passive and for past tense in some cases, and that's what's generating confusion.
This is why I said some of these I wrote down in both forms.
I think the way to resolve it would be to stop and ask yourself, who's performing the action, who's receiving the action, and independent of that way that form is, you know, looks. In other words, if no one had preached the word of truth, even though it's had preached, no one is the subject. No one is preaching, and word of truth is the thing being preached. Now, on the other hand, a passive construction, it would be if the word of God hadn't, or the word of truth hadn't been preached, and hadn't been preached by so-and-so. So you'll either have a by or something like that to indicate agency, or sometimes no agent at all, and the word would be the subject, but it's receiving the action of being preached. Here, the no one is the subject, and they're preaching. And if no one had preached the word of truth, part of the confusion here too is no one. It's hard to imagine no one being the subject of something, you know. But that's really what it is. In other words, it's saying that this didn't happen, but and that may be part of the confusion in that case too. All right. Anybody else with a question there? Okay, number five. I guess we're back to you, John. Close it out here.
Aeon teresomen tasentolas autou esometa os techna theou.
Okay.
A teroumen
tasentolas
autou let's see what it gets to be. Amen on os techna theou.
Right. Yeah, ametha or amen, either one. You don't have an aorist form, so you just have to go with that. And then using an imperfect form is probably the best here, too, just because if we were keeping his commandments, would be, you know, his progressive aspect. So, ete, did you have ete rumen? Is that the form?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it just omega? I didn't check that one. Okay, omicron upsilon. So, ete rumen. And you might have put an aorist here too, but just because it says, if you had an aorist, it's ete resamen. But it's better to put an imperfect, I think, here, just because of the fact that if we were keeping his commandments, it's progressive. And then with the other verb, you don't have a choice because there's no aorist form for to be. So ametha or amen on Technofedu. Okay. Good. Seems like everybody at least has the basic understanding of that. It's one of the more difficult areas. Although you'll find it's not so bad when you're translating. You'll pick these things up. You might not even be thinking type A, type B, type C. You'd just be seeing it as conditional, and this kind of familiarizes you with what you're likely to find. Okay, let's take a look at lesson 46 then, which deals with compound verbs and some irregular verbs. Now, when it says some irregular verbs, these are verbs that a lot of them we've seen already, but it's just kind of categorizing the types of major types of irregularities that exist. So it's not entirely new. I suppose these root aorists are a bit new. I don't think we've really looked too much at the full paradigms of those. But as far as the... we've already seen things like quino and quino for the future. Maybe not talked about it too much, but it's going to give us some more detail on that. But the first section of this, I think, is maybe even more important in the long run, just in terms of meaning and so forth of Greek words and Greek verbs. And that's the area of compound verbs. Basically, what we're talking about is verbs that have a prepositional prefix, or one or more prepositional prefixes, that are coloring the meaning of the verb. Greek seems to lay a great deal of emphasis upon its use of prepositions and the various function words within the language. And this is something that we'll see here as well. Now, section 358, then, the compound verbs. In our analysis of verb forms into morphemes, we have so far encountered only one prefix, namely the augment, epsilon, or with some verbs, eta. And this prefix is peculiar in that it appears only as a constituent of verb forms, and moreover, only in the past tenses of the indicative mood. No prefix of this type occurs in English, but many prefixes do occur as constituents of nouns, verbs, adjectives, and adverbs. Among these are be, as in besmear, befriend, befall, under, as in undertake, understand, underwear, un, as in unclad, ungodly, undo, and uneasily. When a prefix of this second type occurs with an inflected word, that is a verb, it occurs with all forms of it, and thus forms with it a new word, rather than just a grammatical form, that is a tense form of the old word. So we're making a distinction here in English first, and then in Greek, between a morpheme that's only used as a part of a paradigm to indicate a particular tense or something of that nature, and a morpheme that sticks with the verb all throughout its paradigm and is an intrinsic part of the word and forms a new word with it. So that's what we're dealing with here. Now, he's got a few footnotes on this. You can take a look at it as you desire here, but he mentions under morphemes, of course, he refers you back to the lessons that we discussed as to what morphemes were. Remember, it's the smallest part of a word that has meaning. And then there's footnote 2 here where he's talking about the augment. And some verbs taking eta. The verb fellow always takes eta, and mellow, and dunamai frequently, and bulamai rarely. So there were some of these that had funny augments. We've already encountered those to some extent. And then his third footnote here about this, you know, using uneasily, etc. Whether or not these particular prefixes are also morphemes is not now in question. So, in other words, we can see this un is very clearly a morpheme, is what he's saying. And then footnote 4, he says, when a prefix of a second type, and then he gives a footnote called prebases by some writers. In other words, something coming before the base, who reserved the term prefix for the Greek augment and similar proposed elements. So he's saying that some books, in order to make a distinction between the idea of a prefix and what this is happening, call this a prebase rather than a prefix. So if you see that term in some of the other books, you'll know the reason for it. Just making a distinction. I guess it's just kind of a semantic distinction between these two. Then this fifth footnote here, he's talking about a new word rather than just a grammatical form of the old word. He says, thus understand is not part of the paradigm of stand, but a different word. The prefix under occurs throughout its paradigm. Understand, understands, understanding, understood. So his point is that under in that word is not just something that can be tacked onto it in various parts of the verb paradigm. It follows through the entire verb paradigm and makes a new word out of an old word with a new meaning as far as the word itself is concerned. So that's what we're talking about. When we're talking, and when we put these prefixes on Greek words, we're making a new word as far as the meaning is concerned. And So section 359 gets into that. Prefixes of the second, more familiar type are also found in Greek. The most common ones are identical in form to some of the prepositions studied in lessons 25 and 26. Ana, anti, apo, dia, eis, ek, en, epi, kata, meta, para, peri, pro, pros, soon, upo, uper. Those are all prepositions we've already had. And these are among the most common prefixes that are stuck onto verbs. It says, for convenience, we shall speak of verbs which have one or more of these prefixes as constituents, as compound verbs. So we're going to use the term compound verbs to describe verbs that have one or more of these prefixes as constituents. Sometimes you'll stick a couple prepositions on the front of a verb. That's kind of interesting. Then, the exact form which a given prefix has in a particular compound depends on various phonological factors. Here we go again. Phonological problems. Of course, what you can... in a vowel, and the verb begins with a vowel, you get contraction taking place, or some sort of a situation is going to happen there. Then if your preposition, say, ends in a consonant and the verb ends in another consonant, then you may get two consonants falling together, and you can get the same kind of phonological changes we've seen before when you put a sigma, for example, onto kappa or something of that nature and got a C. In other words, there's going to be the same kinds of phonological changes we've run into before. So he breaks those down. And first of all, number one, this is the easiest category. When these prefixes are joined to a verb forms beginning with a consonant, but C4 below, he mentions, they have the forms given above. So in other words, most of these that he's given ended in a vowel. And if you stick them onto a consonant, something that begins with a consonant, you have no problem. The vowel flows into a consonant real easily. So ana plus bino is just anabino. Anti plus lego is anti-lego. Apo plus didomi is apodidomi, and dia plus luo is dia luo. No problem there. So you don't have any phonological changes that you have to worry about in those circumstances. Second category, when a prefix ending with a vowel is joined to a verb form beginning with a vowel, the final vowel of the prefix is dropped. So instead of having the strict contract rules we've had before, we find that the vowel is just dropped off, and then you retain the vowel that's on the verb. Part of the reason for this is, I think, you know, just as far as philosophically speaking, would be to recognize the verb. If you went ahead and did a contraction like you did in other situations, you may lose the recognition of the root idea of the verb, and that may be the reason. I don't know if I'm positive on that, but it seems logical. Look at the examples here. If the initial vowel of the verb form has a smooth breathing, no further change is made in the prefix. In other words, if the verb has a smooth breathing for the vowel, initial vowel, then you just drop off the vowel part of the preposition and then just stick it on just the way it is. So ana plus erkomai is anerkomai. Anerkomai. You drop the alpha off the ana, but you didn't do anything else. You just put erkomai there. Anti plus ekomai is antekomai. And apo plus echo is apecho, apecho. Dia plus erkomai would be dierkomai. Epi plus erotao would be eperotao. And kata plus eulogeo would be kateulogeo. So nothing other than dropping off the final vowel of the prefix and then adding it on. Now, what happens if you've got a rough breathing at the beginning of your verb form? That's part B. If the initial vowel of the verb form has a rough breathing, the prefixes anti, Apo, Epi, Kata, Meta, and Hupo have the forms Ant, As, Ef, Kaf, Meth, and Huf, respectively. Now, if you look for something that's in common to all of these forms, it'll be that they end in either a Ta or a P after you take the vowel off. In other words, if you chop the vowel off of anti, it ends in ant, it ends in tau. If you chop the vowel off of apo, it ends in p, epi ends in p, kata ends in tau, meta ends in tau, and hupo ends in p. And those will change either to the theta. If it's a tau, it'll change to theta. If it's a p, it'll change to phi. So in other words, you just kind of put an H sound on it in English. And, you know, it can make some kind of sense. If rough breathing is corresponding to an H sound, and... if we are kind of, we were wanting to retain the force of that rough breathing, then it's softening the T or the P sound before it. And you know, I think you'd be pretty good shape if you remember it that way. Yes.
In the same, probably doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
About the row.
Well, yeah. If it ended in a row, if the stem ended in a row, you mean? If the verb begins in a row with a rough breathing. No, he doesn't mention that. I'm trying to think now. There may not be any that get compounds that way. It just may never turn up that way. Or it may just function as if it were just a normal consonant beginning the word, and they don't worry about that rough breathing. It's a good point. I can't think of any verbs that start that way, so that may be the real reason. Just never came up. Okay, then an exception to rule two. The final vowels of peri and pro are never dropped. So with peri and pro, they stay on. And again, the ending, the stem ending in a row may be a problem here. I don't know for sure. It would seem like you could just go per echo or something, but it's peri echo. In other words, you keep the iota in the end of peri, and then for pro, you keep the omicron. So for pro plus he geomai is pro e geomai, and pro apone, for example, and then perihistemi. Notice this perihistemi, the rough breathing is going, but notice you've got two iotas in a row, and the second one's got these little two little dots over it, and those are indicating that it's not a diphthong, that it's two separate syllables. In other words, if you put two vowels together in Greek, normally you consider it a diphthong. But this is indicating that it's not a diphthong. So periistemi, in other words, you're going to make a glottal stop or something there to pronounce that. Okay, then third category. When the prefix ek is joined to a verb form beginning with a vowel, it has the form x. So ek plus agorazo, for example, is exagorazo. And this may not be predictable. You know, you wouldn't think that ek would be that much of a problem if a vowel followed it. You know, ek agorazo wouldn't seem to be a problem, but they do change it to exe before a vowel. So, and then ek plus hegeomai would be exegeomai. So that one you may have to remember, because that's not necessarily predictable. Then number four, if the prefixes en and sun are joined to verb forms beginning with certain consonants, they assume special forms as noted below. Now here the potential problem is that you can have a nun or nu before, a nu coming before another consonant. And that's something that we've seen avoided in the past anyway. And so what will happen here is some sort of a change. Now before mu, p, beta, phi, or c, they have the forms m and sum respectively. So you get the nun, the nu changing to a mu before these forms. And that's kind of interesting. And I think it's worth noting, too, just in terms of the fact that many times in English we have cognate words that have come from Greek. And you'll see this like sum, like symphony, for example. It really comes from sun plus phoné, which is, you know, sound together plus sound. But the fact that it's got an M instead of an N might cause you to miss the connection there, that it is from sun. And the same with M, you get the M instead of N sometimes. It's just a phonological change. So, for example, N plus meno is M-meno. So the nu is changed to a mu. Sun plus pempo becomes sumfempo. and or assume tempo, excuse me, it goes ahead and stays, assume tempo. But notice the, I think it's just, they like to put an M sound before a P or something like that, easier than making an N, so. And then N plus balo is M balo, and sun plus pharo is sum pharo. Okay, then, but before gamma, kappa, chi, or xi, they have the forms eg and sug. In other words, you have a gamma there. And, of course, they're going to, before those letters, it's actually going to sound like an N. Because, remember, those are the letters that, when you see a gamma before those letters, it gives an N sound. So, pronouncing them separately is a little bit artificial. So, N plus grapho becomes N grapho. And you still pronounce it like an N or a sun, as in effect, but it's taking the form of a gamma. And sun plus chiro is sun chiro. And sun plus kaleo is sun kaleo. And notice again, you're getting this gamma form rather than the nu. Then C, before lambda, they have the forms L and sul, respectively. So they go ahead and change to a lambda. And you get a double lambda is what happens. So N plus lapo is L lapo. And that one you have to kind of watch, because now it almost looks like an augment on something, you know. Of course, the two lambdas in a row would not normally begin a word, so that'll be a tip-off to you that it's a compound verb. And then sun plus lego would be sulego, sulego, two lambdas. Then before zeta and sigma, N does not change, but sun has the form su. So the nu drops off of sun, but nothing happens to N. So sun plus zeteo would be su zeteo, but, and sun plus strefo would be su strefo. And the form just has become su before the sigma here, or the zeta. And N doesn't change in those instances. Okay, then section 360. The foregoing rules may be conveniently summarized in tabular form. So here's a little chart you can memorize if you want. But I think if you just apply the things that you've learned already, that can usually suffice here. I suppose there's a few of these things that you may want to take note of about the gamma and about the ek taking x before vowels even. Excuse me. But here's your chart. The first column, of course, is the various prepositional prefixes themselves. Then the form that they get before vowels is smooth breathing. The form they get before vowels is rough breathing. And then before certain classes of consonants, the ones that apply, you see, are filled in. So that'll kind of summarize it for you. Now, a few remarks. Number one, remark one, verbs are frequently found with two prefixes. So we can have anti plus ana plus pleroo. So, antana pleroo. And you can get some pretty long verbs by the time you know, if the verb itself was long in the first place, they can get some really long ones. And, yeah, and then put a participle on it and so forth. They are, and they have a noun ending. You can get some real big ones. What was the anakephalaiosatsai, for example, was one form in the New Testament. And you got ana, and then you got the word for head, and some nouns and so forth that have been prefixed. They get some pretty big ones sometimes. But N plus kata plus lepo, N kata lepo. Notice your N is changing to a gamma before the kappa there. And then kata's got no problem there. So N kata lepo. And epi plus sun plus ago, epi sun ago, epi sun ago. And, yes?
How would do both of the prepositions receive an equal stress, or how
interpret? Well, that's a good question. We're going to deal with that kind of interpretation idea here further on down. You'll find that I don't think there's any good hard and fast rule as far as that goes, as to whether you can take the preposition that comes first with a little bit more force than the other one and so forth. I don't think there'd be anything. The basic philosophy is to look for the idea, the concept of each preposition within the whole thing. It's not always going to be easy to do, and he seems to, like a lot of books, kind of roll over this whole idea of trying to pick it apart and see what it means. He admits that you can do that in a lot of cases, but in a lot of the other cases he says you can't do it. But I'm not so sure you can't do it in many of these other cases that he says you can't. In other words, I think the problem again is that as we come over to English, we may not see in English how they got that idea. But if you look at it purely from a Greek standpoint and picture it in the Greek concept, almost always I've been able to find something that relates to it. Some of them are more difficult than others, but I think I get the feeling that it's just because we're not seeing the picture the way they did fully. It's not so much because there's an inconsistency in the way they did it or they just threw things together at random. There's a reason why they, you know, take a verbal idea and put a prepositional idea there. So that I would like you to keep in mind, but as far as weight on which one or the other, I'm not sure that you could really come up with a consistent rule on that. Dan?
Just as far as the concept involved, were these actual vocabulary words or Paul when he's writing, when he just kind of add a prefix to the word to make it?
I see, coin a word on the spot, as it were, to express what he wanted to.
It must have been done sometime.
Yeah.
And if so, how did they decide like which prefix went first if they were adding two prefixes?
Okay, if they're adding two prefixes and which one comes first, I suppose it kind of depend on just what the idea is and the order, the sequence of the thoughts and the idea itself that you're trying to convey. As far as Paul coining words on the spot and that type of thing, I don't know on that case. I would guess that there may be some technical terms that are being introduced for theological purposes. Episunagoge, for example, I'm not sure about that, but the idea is to collect together with emphasis on the place. And that epi, you know, is kind of showing a something. You know, sunago is just to gather together, to lead together, and you get synagogue and so forth from that. And then episunago, it'd be interesting to see if that word is used in classical Greek at all. That one would be one I would check and see, because it might be one that was coined just for the purpose of the rapture and showing us an emphasis on the place or something like that. In other words, to my mind, it would seem possible that Paul may, using these mechanisms, coin a word for a specific technical purpose. In the theology of the New Testament, but then again, I would say that I would guess that the majority of them would be words that were already used in the vocabulary. We know classical Greek did a lot of this kind of thing, but having done that kind of thing, I mean, we find when you're dealing with something technical, words are often coined. In modern technique, if you pick up almost any technology book of some sort in a specific field, they will coin words based on other words that we've already known in the language for technical purposes. And I wouldn't see any problem with that happening in the New Testament. Whether it actually does or not could only be checked by picking the words and trying to trace their etymology and see if they're used elsewhere and so forth. So I can't say for sure that it does happen, but it certainly wouldn't seem to me to be a problem if it did. Because there seems to be enough of a consistency in these prepositional prefixes to warrant a certain amount of that. What you'll find, too, is that you'll see some of these prepositional prefixes and then the same preposition following, where you get that gets really emphatic, you know. And so, you know, it'd be like seeing episunago and then epi again following it, or soon again following, or something like that, to really lay greater stress and emphasis on the idea that the prepositional idea. Seems almost redundant in English, but it's got a real powerful force of emphasis. Out resurrection, out of the dead ones. Is that one you think? Yeah. Again, maybe you could have an ek, anastasis, and then ek. Again, that's really graphic. I mean, you can't help but see it in Greek. And so those are things to keep in mind as well. Okay, then a second remark here. Some compound verbs in the New Testament are formed from simple, that is, uncompounded verbs, which do not occur in the New Testament. So this is one thing you'll find, is that in the New Testament you'll see that certain root verbs will not appear, but their compound forms will appear. Bino is one of those. The form bino by itself existed in the Greek language, but does not occur in the New Testament. And the forms of bino we find in the New Testament are anabino, katabino, you know, and so forth. They'll have one of these prepositions on the front. And in the back on your chart, sometimes what they'll do in order to get a commonality here is to list, for example, bino. If you take a look back here on page 330, you'll find bino listed there, but you notice the dash in the front of it? That's just indicating that it's always occurring with certain prepositional prefixes. So you'll never see bino by itself. But they give you the forms of bino as if you found bino by yourself, because there are a lot of combination forms. So you've got, he mentions anabino as one example in parentheses underneath there, go up, ascend. But it says many other compounds. So there's anabino, there's katabino, and so forth. If you know the basic root, what bino does, then you can just apply the ana on the front of all of those. See, the anabino, anabesumai, anebane, anabebeka, so forth. You could get all of those forms just by knowing what the rules are for attaching these prefixes. Okay, so that's just his point. Bino by itself doesn't occur, but it occurs in lots of different forms. What was that? Yes, they do. There's quite a number of verbs that are that way. So, apokateno, for example, also. Kateno by itself doesn't occur in the New Testament, but apokateno does. Okay, then section 361. Occasionally, it is possible to infer the meaning of a compound verb from the meaning of its constituents. This is what I was getting at here earlier. You can infer the meaning of a compound from its constituents. In other words, just break it down and do an analysis on this. So he says that occasionally that's possible, but then he kind of backs up on that a little bit and kind of withdraws from it a little bit and warns you not to do that too much. But I guess my admonition is, if you find a compound verb, always check. Always, if you can see that it's obviously built up from constituents, I would always break it down. Analytical will usually do this for you too. The analytical lexicon, if it's a compound verb, it'll say from such and such and such and such. Or most of the lexicons will do some breakup. Sometimes they may not give you much as far as insight as to how this thing fits together, but try to think in your mind. Try to see a picture. The examples that he gives down here for luo, for example, we'll go through these, and I think you can see in almost every case that there is something about this prepositional idea with luo that does make some sense. Did you have something, Eric, first?
Yeah. So in the library book, concordant Greek element.
Uh-huh. That's not Stiginga's, is it? Do you know what the author is?
No, okay.
Right. Okay. And they're breaking these down into these constituent parts. Now, those are always good. I think it's part of your exegesis when you come into that. I always take a look at it and try to break it down and see. Just because it may give me some insight as to how that word in the Greek mind is the tenor that it's got or the connotations that it has. This kind of philosophy, just trying to find an English word equivalent to it and kind of make it, you know, draw an equation and so forth, is I think it's weak in many areas and it can cause you to miss some important things. So let's just look at examples and you can judge for yourself. The first examples, he also admits that it's pretty straightforward. Ana plus bino. Bino means go and ana means up. So ana bino, go up. Real straightforward. That's in. Dia meaning through and erkomai meaning go. Dia erkomai means to go through. So that's real clear. Ace meaning into and erkomai meaning go. Ace erkomai, to go into. See, and this is kind of interesting to give a study. If you were dealing with all the compounds of erkomai, you could see very graphically and kind of give you an insight as to the meaning of those prepositions too. Meta meaning with and echo meaning have. Met echo, to partake or share. That makes sense. To have with somebody. Yes.
Right here, he's saying, he's reversing what he said about the prepositions before, because he's giving them
one root meaning. I know it.
If he did this with what he was talking about prepositions before, these things mean about seven different things.
You're right, yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. That's part of the reason why when you do your assignment on prepositions next semester, if some of you choose prepositions, I'm opening it up to other things, but consult these compounds as well. Sometimes you'll see that pure idea. For example, the value of some of these compounds is that there may be a verb, for example, that occurs with this preposition and with this one and with this one and this one and this one. And because verbs are such graphic words, I mean, there's actions going on, then so it's usually pretty easy to clear from see from the context what the sense of the action is and draw a good picture. They afford a very good test case for showing a distinction between the various prepositional ideas and the very root idea they're in. So I would highly encourage you, if you do a study on those things, to be sure and consult compounds as well as just the preposition by itself. You may even get more pure insight as to what they mean. But you've got a good point. He's coming up with a pretty good root idea there. Now, this next category, he may be softening up on that, kind of going back into this old mode again. It says, unfortunately, however, the meaning of compound is not usually so transparent. The model verb luo, loose, set free, untie, destroy, for example, has a number of compounds, but no clear meanings where the prefixes involved can be derived by subtracting the root meaning of luo from the meanings of the compounds. Okay. Well, some of these are more difficult than others, but I think my experience has been, if you really look into into it a little bit more carefully from the Greek viewpoint, you may see some things you didn't see on the surface. So let's look at a few examples and you can see what I mean. Analuo, that's perhaps one of the more difficult ones, because that's, but still, it, if you translated it literally, in other words, just take ana, the root meaning, and luo, what would you come up with? Loose up. Yeah, to loose up. Okay, and it means to untie in the transitive. And in the intransitive, to depart, return, that one may be a little bit harder to see. But untie, loose up, you know, we talk about loosening up a knot or something like that, untying something. I don't see a real problem with that. That's probably the hardest one of these. But then apoluo, for example, to set free, release, pardon, let go, send away, dismiss. Apo means away, and luo means loose, to loose away. And we've just got a real clear idea as far as I'm concerned, to set free, to loose away. Dia luo, to break up, dissolve, decay, destroy. Well, dia means through, and luo means to loose. So the idea is to loose through. So it's a picture of something being loosed through. In other words, throughout it, it's being loosed. It would picture to me a breakup of its internal structure. Yeah. And so it means break up, dissolve, decay, destroy. Ek luo mai, to be weary, give up, be ungirded, and so forth. Well, the idea of out, to loose out, you know, to be loosed out, to give out, you see. I think it's real clear to me. Epi luo, explain, interpret. Now, epi means upon, and loose means to loose upon something. In other words, what happens when you explain something? It means that you unravel it, as it were. You loose upon it. You pounce on it and you loose it so that people can understand the constituent parts. Well, I don't want to go on here forever, but kata luo, throw down, destroy, mean down, loose down. Para luo, to loose beside, undo, weaken, and so forth. To me, they all make sense. So I have a hard time seeing what his point was there. Yeah. Admittedly, I think his point is in English you may not be able to see an obvious connection, but just look at the Greek picture for a while, and I think you'll find a lot more. So I just want to encourage you to do that. Okay, did the roll book make it around? Okay. No assignment for tomorrow. We'll just continue with that. And lesson 46, if you're working ahead, I'm not going to assign all of that. It's a big lesson and a lot of busy work, so I'm just going to, I'll reduce it a little bit. So.
Yeah. Sounds like grace going on here, huh? Mercy?